evaluating the abdomen and pelvis. I know that what we're concentrating on is just normal anatomy. But it's nice for you to realize that what you learn in pathology really has an important role when it comes to disease processes. And in what I do, knowing the normal anatomy is incredibly important. So to start with, I wanted to show you an abdominal radiograph, also sometimes known as a KUB or a plain film. This is actually what we used to use primarily to evaluate the abdomen. And you can see from the images right here, this is us, you know, the reason why it's called KUB is because the kidneys are somewhere here. Ureters are somewhere here, and here's the bladder. So that's why you can see that this is actually not a great screening for evaluating disease processes in the abdomen. What you can see very well, for example, is are the bones. You can see the spine. You can see the bony pelvis. But if you're looking to look for organs or vessels, it's very, very difficult. You can make out the contour of the spleen right here. And perhaps you might even be able to see the edge of the liver right here. There's a little bit of a contour of the kidney right here. And what you can see is that the air is loosened on a radiograph. And so what we're seeing right here is a combination of air and stool in the rectum. And so for most of what we do as radiologists, when we image the abdomen and pelvis, we use other imaging modalities. Ultrasound, are you guys familiar at all with ultrasound? Okay, so we have ultrasound, CT, computed tomography, and MRI, also known as magnetic resonance imaging. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over the physics of each of these modalities. It can take a really long time, because what I really want to concentrate on is to show you guys normal anatomy, okay? But feel free if during the course of my talk, you have a question, raise your hand, and this should be interactive, okay? And can you still hear me up there? Yeah, okay. So what we do with cross-sectional imaging is that we acquire images and reveal them in three planes. And so just as a reveal for you, the transverse plane, it's also known for us as the axial plane. So it's as if you're cutting cross sections through the body. The sagittal plane is this way. And then the coronal plane is 90 degrees to the sagittal plane. Okay? So this is a CT scan, and almost all CAT scans are acquired in the axial or transverse plane. And with post-processing, what we do is we can then reformat it into a coronal or a sagittal or an oblique plane. So basically, we can play with our raw data and manipulate the images, and I'll show you some examples of that. So this is a coronal CT scan of the same patient. This is unenhanced CT, and this is a contrast-enhanced CT. The way you can tell is that this is the abdominal aorta, and we give IV contrast because it gives us an idea of physiology, but more importantly, it helps us identify pathology. So if you look here, this is the aorta, which is quite dense. And the reason why it's dense is that we've given intravenous contrast, which is an iodine based contrast, and that shows up as being really dense on CT scan. So you can see that this is about 40 seconds after we gave IV contrast. This is 70 seconds after IV contrast, and you can see how quickly the contrast has basically washed out of the aorta, and this is 2 minutes later, and the aorta, if you look here, is almost like a non-contrast CT. So how does it help us? For example, let's look at the kidney right here. Here's the right kidney. Here's the left kidney. After we gave IV contrast, this is the arterial phase. And what you can see is that the cortex of the kidney enhances much more rapidly than the underlying medulla. So with time, at 70 seconds, you can see that the cortex is starting to wash out and that the medulla is starting to enhance. At 2 minutes, what's happened now is that the medulla is actually concentrating the contrast and filtering it and processing the contrast, and then we start getting excretion into the calyces and the collecting system. So there's a lot of physiology involved, but this is the way we can pick up pathology. Is a kidney not working? Is there a mass? All that is something we can better tell once we give IV contrast. So just for quick orientation, the bone, this is the spine, CT, on CT, because it's got calcium and is ossified, it is actually really high density. Fat, on the other hand, is extremely low density on CT. And then everything else is more or less soft tissue. If you look, this is the liver. Here's the spleen. Here's the abdominal muscles. They're all kind of around the same density. One other density is air. So if you look here, here is the diaphragm. Here's the, you can't see the diaphragm on the right, but this right here is lung. And I think Dr. Walsh spoke to you about the chest and showed you lots of images of the chest. Well, the lung contains air, and air on CT is black. So this is an example of how we can utilize the fact that the kidneys excrete contrast so that we can evaluate the collecting system of the kidney, the renal pelvis, the ureter, and the urinary bladder. So these are, I'm going to play them. It's a cine clip. This is what we call a CT urogram. The reason why we do a study like this is usually in the context of a patient who has hematuria or blood in their urine. And the question is, what's causing it? And this is a great way for us to evaluate the entire collecting system or the genital urinary tract. So I'm going to play it first, and then I will stop it to point out some anatomy. Okay, great. So again, the CT scan was done and acquired in the transverse or axial plane. We then reconstructed in the coronal plane, so you can lay out the entire kidney and the ureter and bladder all in one plane. So right here, we're seeing the left kidney. This high density contrast is excreted contrast in the collecting system. And by collecting system, these are referred to as, trying to do my left and right hand together, the calyces right here. So you can see that there are calyces in every part of the kidney. Here is the calyces come together to form the renal pelvis. And then you can follow, then from the renal pelvis, it becomes the ureter. And because we're going in and out of the plane, I have to scroll anteriorly and posteriorly sometimes, but here is the mid portion of the right ureter. Here's the left ureter right here. And then we can see the distal ureter. And if you follow those distal ureters, this one is on the left, here's the right, you can see it inserting into the urinary bladder. So let me freeze it right here. And it could be right here, going in. And this is the bladder. Okay. So moving on to another organ. So the liver is in the right upper quadrant. This is a coronal view of the liver. And here's a sagittal view of the liver. This is a contrast enhanced CAT scan. And you can see that because the aorta is still bright. And if you look, the overall parenchyma of the liver is pretty homogeneous. So if it's pretty homogeneous, what do you think are these tubular branching structures in the liver? Yeah, they're vessels, right? So by giving contrast, we can not only evaluate the parenchyma, but we can also evaluate the vessels in the liver. So this is an axial image of the mid portion of the liver, and you can see that these branching structures are vessels. These are the hepatic veins, and there are three major hepatic veins. This is the IVC, and you can see the right hepatic vein going into the IVC, the middle hepatic vein draining into the IVC, and here's the left hepatic vein draining into the IVC as well. This, a little lower, is a horizontally oriented vessel, which is the portal vein. That's the main portal vein. And so the difference is that the hepatic veins obviously are draining blood from the liver into the IVC, whereas the portal vein is the main vessel that gives the liver its main blood supply. About two-thirds to 70% of the blood supply to the liver comes from the portal vein. The rest comes from the hepatic artery. So this is just, a cine to show you the top of the liver and all the hepatic vein anatomy and portal vein anatomy as well. So I'm just going to scroll once. So that you can see the entire liver. And so from bottom up, what we're showing you right here, portal vein, main portal vein, as it goes into the liver, it gives off the left portal vein right here. So after it's given off the left portal vein, it continues into the liver as the right portal vein. And then we can also look at the fact that the left and right portal vein bifurcates as well. And that's important because it divides the liver into segments. Here, this is the same image that I showed on the still. IVC, middle hepatic vein, left hepatic vein, and right hepatic vein. And you can see how the vessel gets bigger as it goes centrally toward the IVC because it's draining blood from the liver into the venous system. So why is that important? Yes? Because that's a great question. It's just a matter of when during the CT scan do we acquire the images relative to when the contrast was injected. So on these images, what you can see is that the aorta has some contrast, but it's not as dense as you would expect it to be if it were during the arterial phase, which is around 40 seconds. So the portal venous phase is around 70 seconds after IV contrast injection. And at 70 seconds, it is the portal venous phase. And that's why and then by that time, the liver already has gotten its hepatic arterial supply. It's now getting its portal venous supply as well. And what was given via the hepatic arteries are now being drained via the hepatic veins. Yes? It can be, most typically is in the antecubital fossa from either the right or left arm. So, the vein. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it goes into the vein, then into the right side of the heart, through the pulmonary circulation, into the left side of the heart, out into the aorta, and then, both up into the neck, right? As it goes into the aorta, it's going to supply the great vessels of the head and neck, and then it's going to go down into the thoracic and abdominal descending aorta. Usually we don't need to, because in the end, whether you inject from the right or left arm, it's going to end up in the same place. However, if we inject via the foot, for example, someone has no IV access and we inject in the foot, yes, that would change things, and we would change our timing, because it will take longer to go from a foot vein up into the heart than it will from an arm vein into the heart. So, good. And also other reasons too, like for example, if someone might have superior vena cava syndrome where their SVC is occluded, then we would like to inject on a certain arm and not the other arm. So, right. So the more we know about the patient and some problems, the better we can tailor our CAT scan to make sure that this study is performed well. Yes. Not usually, because of the fact that it wouldn't change how the circulation in general is. I mean, it may change a little bit the mesenteric arterial system, the flow, but it's still, because we're looking at anatomy, it will not really make a difference for our CT or MR. In ultrasound, it does make a difference. For example, like if we're looking at the gallbladder, we want to make sure that the gallbladder is distended. So we would like a patient. Actually, I'll ask you a question. If we want the gallbladder distended so that we could better evaluate it, do we want it with the patient eating? Do we want to look at it after the patient ate? Or do we want to wait several hours after they ate? Wait, exactly. Because after the patient eats, the gallbladders can contract, will contract. And when it's contracted, we won't be able to see the inside of the gallbladder as well as when the gallbladder is distended. Good. So the reason why we went through the hepatic vein and portal vein anatomy is because of this slide. This is Quesnel segmental anatomy. It's named after a French surgeon. And this is the liver, and the liver is divided into 8 segments. Here is the IVC. Here's the right hepatic vein, middle hepatic vein, left hepatic vein. So that divides the liver into lobes. So for example, the middle hepatic vein is going to divide the liver into the left hepatic lobe and the right hepatic lobe. The left hepatic vein will divide it into a medial and lateral segment of the left lobe. So these two are both parts of the left lobe. Is 4A the medial or the lateral segment of the left lobe? It's a trick question, right? Because it depends on how you would actually think about it. Like, is it based on the midline of the patient? Or what? But what it is really is based on the middle of the liver. So this segment is the medial segment of the left lobe, and this segment is the lateral segment of the left lobe. So we've now been able to divide the liver into left and right lobes. We can then further divide it into a lateral and a medial segment of the left lobe. The right hepatic vein divides it into an anterior and posterior segment. Then what happens is that the portal vein, this is the main portal vein, here's the left portal vein, and here's the right portal vein, that divides the liver superior and into superior segments and inferior segments. And depending on where, division is, we can then divide the liver into 8 different segments. So why is that important? Well, you can imagine that if a patient may be a potential liver donor, say they want to donate a part of their liver to a kid that needs it, we want to be able to look at the anatomy, figure out whether or not it is feasible to resect a portion of the liver. More commonly, what happens is that the patients have liver disease, and the hepatobiliary surgeon needs to know whether or not there is enough functional liver to leave the patient to live, you know, if he took out a certain amount of liver. So what we do here is we post-process. So remember I showed you the axial image of the liver and the hepatic veins, and then we can then divide the liver based on knowing the hepatic vein anatomy into lobes. And then based on the portal vein anatomy, we can then divide it into segments. So here, we've done that post-processing, and we've given each segment a different color. And here you can see how we have divided the liver into 8 segments. And what it tells you right here is, here's the total volume of liver. Each segment right here has contributes a certain amount to the volume of the liver. And if we were, for example, in this patient, to remove everything except for segments 1, 2, and 3, this is how much will be resected, and that will be how much the patient will be left with. So it's very important by being able to know our anatomy and to be able to post-process, we can then guide management. So just moving on to another organ. This is the spleen. This is, again, a contrast-enhanced CT scan. This is an axial plane, and this is a coronal plane of the upper abdomen. Here's the spleen here, and here we have the spleen here. You might notice that the spleen on this patient looks different from the spleen on this patient. On this patient right here, the spleen looks pretty homogeneous. On this image of the coronal study, if you look at the spleen, it's slightly heterogeneous. And the reason has to do, again, with blood flow. Early on, before the portal venous phase, if we happen to scan a little early, the red and yellow pulp in the spleen enhances at a different rate. However, at the portal venous phase, they both equalize, and then then the parenchyma becomes homogeneous. It's important for us as radiologists to know that, because if we didn't know that, we might actually mistake areas of inhomogeneity for pathology. Same patient, a different patient, but same patient here, axial CT. Coronal reformation of the CT scan performed with intravenous contrast. Just wanted to show you the pancreas right here. Here's the tail of the pancreas, the body of the pancreas, and then on the coronal plane, you can nicely see the head of the pancreas, which is wrapped around the superior mesenteric vein. So because the organs are in multiple planes, or multiple slices, multiple axial slices, sometimes a certain part of the organ is better seen either on the coronal plane or sagittal plane, because you get the entire cranial-caudal dimension of the organ. So here again, pancreas, and then head of the pancreas, body, and tail. The adrenal glands, we're showing this on an axial plane and a coronal plane. Remember, there are 2 limbs to each of the adrenal glands. We have a medial and a lateral limb here. Here's medial, here's lateral. And then here's the opposite side, left side. And then on a coronal plane, you can nicely see the normal adrenal glands on both sides, sitting right on top of the kidneys in the retroperitoneum. So this is a cine that I'm going to show in the coronal plane so that we can quickly review and look at each of the organs that we just talked about. So here, we'll look at this. This is a coronal contrast enhanced CT. Here's the heart. Here's the diaphragm, right upper quadrant. This is the liver. So here's the liver on coronal. And then if we look at the left side, here, we get the spleen. The pancreas, it's right here. Here. body and head, pancreas. The right kidney, left kidney. Doesn't scroll as well. Here we go. So here's the kidneys again. And then sitting right on top of the kidneys, you guys see the adrenal glands? Right here and right there. So we can also look at the abdominal aorta. We were just talking about the aorta. And looking at the branch vessels, the mesenteric arteries coming off of the aorta. That's often important in patients who might have mesenteric ischemic symptoms. And we want to determine whether there is any significant atherosclerosis. We often look at the abdominal aorta when we're concerned about the possibility of an aneurysm. So the CT scan, these are multiple axial CT scans performed at different levels from top, going slightly more inferiorly. Top going slightly more superiorly. So the abdominal aorta is here, and it is quite dense. And that's because, again, we just timed the CT scan to be performed during the arterial phase of contrast injection. So this is around 40 seconds after IV contrast injection. Abdominal aorta, the first branch off of the aorta is the celiac artery. The celiac artery, as you follow a little more distally, will give off three branches. Here I'm just showing two, which is the common hepatic artery here. You can see it going toward the right side to feed the liver. And then here, this one right here, is going toward the spleen, the splenic artery. The third branch, of course, is the left gastric artery. As we go slightly more inferiorly, and the second branch off of the abdominal aorta is the superior mesenteric artery. And then the last mesenteric artery to come off of the aorta, this tiny little one, is the inferior mesenteric artery. Now, using the axial plane right here, we are able to reconstruct the CT scan in the sagittal plane, which is a better way for us to depict the origins of the mesenteric arteries. So here is the abdominal aorta. First branch, celiac. Second branch, SMA. Third branch, right there, that tiny little one coming off, the inferior mesenteric artery. So this is just a cine of the sagittal image of the aorta, just like what I've just shown you here, just to give you an appreciation of how it looks on real time when we're looking at it on the workstation. So here. Aorta, celiac, SMA, IMA, right there. But there are other branches off of the abdominal aorta that we actually will look at as well. For example, here, again, this is an axial contrast enhanced CT timed for maximal aortic enhancement. Here's the right kidney, and this branch coming off of the right side of the abdominal aorta is the right renal artery. On a different slice, left kidney, a vessel, the branch coming off of the left side of the abdominal aorta is the left renal artery. And then finally, as we follow the aorta more distally, it bifurcates into the common iliac arteries. Here is a coronal reconstructed image showing the anatomy that we just talked about. Abdominal aorta bifurcating into common iliac arteries. And then higher up, you can see the right renal artery and the left renal artery. And this, for example, is an important image for us because with renal transplantation, we have patients who are renal donors. We often will do this CAT scan because we want to evaluate the kidneys to make sure that there is no pathology in the kidneys before you use it to give to someone else, right? Then the second part is that we want to evaluate the vascularity. When you when you're transplanting a kidney, you want to use the one that is the easiest to transplant. So you want one that only has single renal arteries. If this one has four renal arteries on the left side, you're not going to choose that because it, you know, technically takes more time and you want to get the kidney reanastomosed to the recipient as quickly as possible. So this is why it's also important. So this is just the coronal plane of the aorta that I'm going to scintate for you to see the takeoff of the renal arteries and the bifurcation of the aorta into the common iliacs. So what we're seeing is that coming from the thorax, right, here's the diaphragm here, and here's the other diaphragm right here. So this is the chest. We're in the abdomen. The thoracic aorta comes down, becomes the abdominal aorta. And then as the aorta comes down into the mid-abdomen, we are seeing the right renal artery, the left renal artery right here. And then as you follow the aorta, you can see it bifurcating. We can do more with the images. CT is fun. You know, here, what you're going to see is that we are going to look at the aorta, but also concentrate on the common iliac artery. So we're going to be, we've done post-processing, and you can see how we're now turning and flipping the vessel, flipping the images 360, rotating the images 360 degrees. This gives you a look at the entire iliac artery. Another thing that we can do with post-processing is that we can subtract all the bones and everything else, play with it so that you can still see the renal, some of the solid organs. And you can see here that, you know, we're seeing the celiac, the hepatic artery here, the splenic artery, the SMA. Oh, sorry. I don't know if you saw that. The renal arteries here. Here is the hepatic artery, splenic artery, common iliacs. Look at the common iliacs bifurcating into the internal and external iliac arteries. Then at the level of the groin, the as we go down to the groin right here, the external iliac artery is going to bifurcate into the, the external iliac artery becomes the common femoral artery, and then the common femoral artery will bifurcate into a superficial and profundus femoris artery. So here is just another scene to flip it around so you can see some of the things that we do on the workstation. So we also will look at the inferior vena cava. Remember, this is the abdominal aorta. The IVC is to the right of the aorta. So here is the IVC. This is the intrahepatic portion of the IVC. And we call that intrahepatic because here's the liver. And the IVC goes through the liver. And as it goes up above the diaphragm, it's going to go and drain into the right atrium. So this is a sagittal of that same patient to better show you the IVC's course as it goes into the right atrium. So here's the IVC, intrahepatic portion. We're now above the diaphragm and then going into the right atrium here. This is just a quick cine so that you can see the IVC, which is formed by the common iliac veins. So here's the common iliac veins, and they're going to join. So just right there. So here's the IVC, left common iliac, right common iliac vein. And then you can see it going into, up into the right atrium here. Okay, so we can also look at other veins. The portal vein, as you know, or may remember, is made up of two veins, right? This large one right here is the superior mesenteric vein. It drains the bowel. So you're seeing the bowel right here. And the veins draining the bowel, all coming together to form the SMV. The other vein that makes up the portal vein is this one right here, which is the splenic vein. And here's just a quick, again, cine to show you what we're looking at. So here is the portal vein. This is the SMV here. And then if you follow this vessel right here, do you see it going into the spleen? Right there. So all that anatomy that you've learned actually comes into play, and we can actually see it really well. So the gallbladder. So we talked about CT, where you can see fat as being dark, bone as being really dense. A lot of it, everything else, like muscle and even organs, solid organs, are soft tissue density. But the gallbladder contains bile, and bile is like water. And so water density on CT is what we call kind of more water density. So here is the gallbladder right here. And this is stomach here. You see how stomach also contains some water, some fluid? So same density. So here's the axial CT, gallbladder here, coronal CT, and we're seeing the gallbladder here. So CT does a nice job at evaluating the gallbladder, but what we really use as our first line of imaging for the gallbladder is an ultrasound. So this is to orient you this is a transabdominal ultrasound performed in the sagittal plane of the gallbladder. So transabdominal meaning we take the transducer and we lay it on the patient's abdomen and scan that way. And what you can see is this is the liver right here. These are some hepatic veins. This is the gallbladder. And the gallbladder on ultrasound, again, because it contains bile, bile is fluid. Fluid is anechoic. It lets the sound beam, ultrasound beam go straight through. So water and bile are dark on ultrasound. And here you can see beautifully the wall of the gallbladder. Which is, and so you get a lot more detail of the gallbladder on ultrasound than you do on CAT scan. So let me just show you a cine loop of the gallbladder in the sagittal plane. Again, so just so you see, because the previous image was cut off, but here you can see that this is the skin. This is the subcutaneous fat, and then we go intra-abdominal, liver, and then we're going to cine, and you're going to see the gallbladder. What you're seeing here is some what we call echogenic, the bright stuff right here, causing shadowing. Well, air causes shadowing and won't let the ultrasound beam penetrate. So this is just bowel next to the gallbladder. So another thing that we evaluate whenever we're looking at the gallbladder is to look at the bile duct, the common bile duct we want to know. Part of the reason why we're evaluating the gallbladder most of the time is for looking for gallstones, but you also know that stones can be in the duct. And so we want to evaluate the size of the common bile duct. And here is a grayscale image of the gallbladder. Here's the liver in the sagittal plane. And this, we turn on color Doppler. So the reason for that is that the color Doppler will help us determine whether we found the common bile duct. The common bile duct lies anterior to this vascular structure. Does anybody know what this vascular structure is? No, actually, so this vascular structure is going toward the liver. The GDA is a much smaller vessel. So this is a big vessel heading toward the liver. It's the main portal vein. So, and one other thing that you can see on Doppler is that it tells you the direction in general of flow. So flow toward transducer is above the baseline. So it's going to be yellow and red. So it's mostly yellow and red. And then flow away from the liver is going to be blue. So remember how I said there are some hepatic vein branches? Well, that's because the hepatic, you know, and the, these hepatic veins are blue because the blood is going away from the liver and hence away from the transducer. So here is an MRI, so a different modality. MRI can acquire images in any plane. Unlike CT, we actually will acquire the images separately. So if we do an axial plane, we acquire axial images. If we do a coronal plane, we'll acquire in the coronal plane. If we do a sagittal plane, we'll do a separate sagittal acquisition. For that reason, MRI takes a lot more time than a CT exam. So, but the beauty of MR is that we can play around with our parameters and make show things in a really great way, which is also useful for picking up pathology. This is what we call, this is a coronal image, and this is what we call a T2 weighted image. It's T2 weighted because anything that has fluid is going to be bright on the sequence, regardless of what it is. So for example, this right here, the way this is acquired is as a big slab. This is probably about a 5 centimeter thick coronal plane. So everything that's bright within that slab is going to show up. So here, this is CSF. This is small bowel containing fluid. Here's stomach containing fluid. So it's nonspecific. However, it's helpful though. We know what we're looking at. We know that this is stomach, this is small bowel, and this is CSF. Those are not the structures that we have performed this MRI for. Instead, we're looking here. And what we're seeing right here is this is the common bile duct. Here is the right hepatic duct. Here's the left hepatic duct. So we can even evaluate the biliary anatomy by using MRCP. This structure right here containing fluid, what structure is that? Gallbladder, right. So a different patient, but I just wanted to show you what else we could see. This is also a coronal thick slab T2 weighted sequence. Here's fluid in the stomach. Here's fluid in the small bowel right here, here, here. And this is CSF. What we're seeing here is the right hepatic duct, the left hepatic duct, the common hepatic duct, and then here, lower down is the common bile duct. And you see this structure right here, this little obliquely oriented T2 weighted bright duct? That is actually the pancreatic duct. So we can see a lot of anatomy. Now, do you guys remember when the common hepatic duct becomes the common bile duct? Right, perfect. So here, that little nubbin right here is the cystic duct, but I'll show it to you a little better on a different patient. So now this is also a coronal T2 weighted sequence, but this is, if you look at it, the image quality is not as good, right? And that's because it's very grainy, and it's grainy because this is a very thin slice. This is probably about 0.9 millimeters. And the reason we do that is so that we can actually see fine details. So if you look, this is the common hepatic duct, and this duct right here, that's a little squiggly, you see that right there? It goes into the common hepatic duct. What duct do you think that is? That's right. And why do we have this little squiggly appearance? And that's actually important because it's one way for the surgeon to identify the cystic duct. Because you could have... It's spiral like this. Do you remember hearing the vowels of Heister? Right. So, you know, that's the reason why the cystic duct has this appearance. And the reason, as again, it's important because that is a real easy way for us to identify the cystic duct. While I've shown you all normal anatomy also includes variants of normal anatomy, right? So you can have a lot of biliary anomalies, and you want to make sure when the surgeon's in there and clipping off what he thinks or she thinks is a cystic duct, that is really the cystic duct and not a anonymous branch of the bile duct. Oh, and extra credit. What is actually, before I give you extra credit, what is this structure right here? Good. And what about these little tiny filling defects within it? Gallstones. Right. Answer. Oh, okay. So, 5-minute warning, guys. So, let's just quickly go through the GI tract, and then I will stop there. So, the GI tract starts in the abdomen. We can follow the esophagus right here. And the esophagus usually contains air, and occasionally it will contain fluid. So, air, remember what I said, is black on CT. So, here is the esophagus. As it goes down below the diaphragm, it's going to connect to the stomach. And this is the GE junction, gastroesophageal junction. On the axial plane, here is the esophagus containing air. Here's the stomach, so esophagus, stomach, and right here is the gastroesophageal junction. So the stomach. Now the stomach will often contain fluid when we evaluate the patient on CT scan. And this is an axial CT and a coronal CT, and here's the stomach. And you can see enhancement of the gastric mucosa. Here's the lumen of the stomach containing air and fluid. Now remember, when the patient is lying down in the CT scanner, they're supine. So when they're supine, air is going to rise up, right? So this is anterior, that's posterior. So we would expect air to be located anteriorly relative to the fluid in the stomach. Here's a coronal plane demonstrating the stomach. So this is a coronal CT showing the small bowel. The small bowel here, all of this right here is small bowel. But if you look at this small bowel, the proximal small bowel, as opposed to the distal small bowel, you'll probably see that morphologically it looks a little different. This part of the small bowel looks a little more feathery. If you look, here's the valvula convente. Here it is right here. There's more of them here, right? There's more folds. This is jejunum, and this is the ileum. And then we can also see the colon. Now, the colon is different, right? The colon contains stool, and it contains air. It doesn't usually contain liquid unless the patient has diarrhea. So here, if we look from the patient's right side right here, this is the right colon or ascending colon containing stool. Here is the hepatic flexure, transverse colon. So right here will be the splenic flexure. Then as it comes down right here is the descending colon. And then, of course, we can never leave the GI tract without looking at the appendix right here. That little worm-like structure coming off of the base of the cecum. It's very small, it's tubular, and it's blind-ending. Now, it normally contains air. Occasionally, it contains a little bit of fluid. And I can tell you that the appendix is what we what accounts for a significant number of CAT scans that we do through the ER or in the acute setting. Patients come in with right lower quadrant pain, and the history is rule-out appendicitis. So we're looking to see if the appendix is normal or abnormal before sending a patient to the operating room. So I'm going to stop right here. I hope you guys, this is a quick look at the abdomen and pelvis, and I hope you can appreciate why you need to know your anatomy. And actually, the radiology is a lot of fun. There's a lot of correlation, and, you know, it's a great field. Oh, I'm sorry. How do I stop this?
It just hit speed.
Okay.
And then we can just exit out there. So that was great.
Oh, did you like that?
I actually did. That's just the sheer repetition, the constant reorienting. You know, it's just important for where they are.
Good.
Right,
yeah.
So it was really like, finally our last one was like, just sweet. For me, that was the sweet spot in terms of where I really want to you know, where they are, mm-hmm. and just reinforcing all normal things, big things that they've all seen and come up and up. For me, that was as good as possible.
Oh, good, yeah. Yeah, it's just hard, because I don't, like, you know, the cine is hard, cause, you know, the mouse doesn't, I should have brought my mouse pad, but I tried to do my left and right hand, but it's okay. It is a challenge.
It always takes longer than it takes to go through the things, and even then
oh, yeah, absolutely. Right, but it's great that you said 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, I stopped at a GI trap, you know? This is great. We're going to do the whole thing. Yeah, great.
So thanks.
You're welcome.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering what you were pointing out on these images down here.
Oh, right, here.
So I got that.
Yes. You know what? It's right here. That right there?
Which is
that's right. Esophagus.
Oh, okay.
And then bring that one over right there. Above anterior,
right.
So what you're seeing here is the distal esophagus containing air.
Okay.
This one is now the gastroesophageal junction.
Oh, so it's the same thing, just
in a different plane.
All
yes,
right, cool.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's only grows. But if, as long as you've got normal ureters, if the ureters aren't normal, if they go through the bladder straight rather than obliquely, then as the bladder fills, then the back pressure through those. So the angle of the ureters going through the bladder wall is essentially helping form a sphincter. So that the fuller the bladder gets, the more stretch there is, the more compression that you'll get, you know? It's the same thing with the penis when we were talking about erection. As the more blood fills in the corpora cavernosa or corpus spongiosum, the more compressed the veins get, right? So that's a sort of a... So even though it, yes, right? Same kind of thing. It's the same kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, so we don't do that.
Okay.
Is that what you mean for us?
Okay.
Yes. We would have had to have special ones, but we actually work with a funeral home that does the cremation for us. And then the ashes go back to the body. To the families if they requested them back. And for any families that don't have that, we have a site at the Burlington Cemetery for interment of the ashes. So they're not mixed. They're all individually cremated, and they're all kept separate for that. No.
That's enough.
That's your character. Okay.
Just tell a lot of these things, there's fine things that you can't see. So if you've got four times, there's a different thing. You can look at those things. But that's the thing.
Yeah.
So you can see the